And welcome into the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. A tough loss last night for the Nashville Predators. They fall 5-2 in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup playoffs against the Carolina Hurricanes. We've got a ton of reaction to get to on today's show, and as always, taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Fellas, we got a lot to get to today on in terms of the game itself and lineup decisions and all the big talking points that came out of the Game 1 loss last night for the Predators. But, Joe, let's start with you. Just initially, your reaction to the game itself. It's 2-2 heading into the third period. The Predators, I thought, played pretty well in the first period. The second period, I thought it started to shift more toward Carolina. And then in the third period, I thought Carolina was just all over the Predators. They get it done 5-2. What was your reaction to what we saw last night in Game 1?
Yeah, I'd say the Preds played in the second and third about how I sound and feel right now.
It's not good.
But, you know, and I will say, now they did recover in the second period. And, you know, like John Hines said last night, you know, they were tied going the third. So it was still anyone's game. But then when you come away after the third, to me, it's just, it looked a lot like most of the meetings between these teams, which is Carolina. Look, we're going to talk a ton today about what Nashville could have done better and the lineup and all these things. But my number one takeaway is Carolina is freaking good. And they are going to be really hard to beat in a series. And I think, you know, that was a game where you did have an opportunity. You needed some breaks. You needed to finish some earlier opportunities. And it's a tough one. It's a tough one to lose, but it's also, I thought, a little bit of an eyeful of the difference between these teams. There's a pretty big difference.
Yeah, and there certainly looked like there was a big difference last night in the final 30 minutes or so of that game. And Joe, one thing that stood out to me, and I was interested to see what this was going to look like once the playoffs came around, and especially after what we saw in the last two games of the regular season, I think it was pretty clear what the Predators were going to try to do in this series, especially when you looked at the lineup they put out there in Game 1, and they were going to try to be the more physical team. They were going to try to muck things up a little bit and make it difficult for Carolina to win some of these puck battles, and they were going to try to use the body. And I thought the one thing that really stood out to me, and I thought was pretty clear from the jump last night, and that was Carolina is not afraid to play that way. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a strength of Carolina's, but they played, you know, a kind of a rough and tumble game last night, and Carolina showed that they're not going to be physically intimidated in this series by the Predators. And I thought that was an important message to send if you're Carolina in Game 1. I thought they handled the physicality pretty well. I didn't think it was an overly physical playoff game. I mean, it had their moments, just like a normal playoff game does. But I came away, you know, as quickly as the first period saying, all right, I mean, Carolina, they're equipped to handle things like this. It's not like they just can't handle that physical style of playoff hockey.
Yeah, totally agree. I thought the Preds did exactly what they wanted to do early. And I thought the first period was good. I mean, if the Preds could take that first period and duplicate it over and over again, they would do it in a heartbeat. You know, it was a good, evenly played period. They were physical. They did their thing. I thought, you know, those guys, the Herd line, the new old Herd line did their thing. And I thought Janot had some moments on that third line, but like you said, the Canes knew it. They knew it. That's what everybody's been talking about. And it didn't need to be talked about for them to know it. And they came out and, I thought, really answered that bell as well. And and then eventually they got it to the kind of game they want. And the third period was exactly what they want it to be and what Nashville does not want it to be. And it just didn't look like the Preds really could do much about it for most of that third period.
It didn't, and it was funny because, as you said, I mean, they started the game, I thought, pretty well. You get the first goal of the game. Philip Forsberg makes a great play to cut to the middle of the ice, finishes it in a way that only Philip Forsberg can on this team. I thought, you know, Ryan Poris, X-Factor, Ryan Johansson made a great play on that play to set up that goal by Philip Forsberg. I mean, it's a heck of a play by Johansson. He uses his body. He shields off the defender, makes a great kind of wraparound pass to hit Forsberg in the middle, and you're thinking to yourself, well, here they are again. It's the playoff version of the Jofa line, and they're going to look really good. And they had their moments where they looked okay last night, but I still think another level, obviously, that they're going to have to get to be competitive in this series. I thought the Predators got a little stick-happy last night with their penalties that they took, whether it was tripping penalties, whether it was hooking penalties, holding, whatever you want to point to in that area. You put Carolina on the power play enough times, eventually that's going to catch up to you. Now, it didn't last night, but conversely, and we'll talk about the lineup and Elli Tolvanen and all that coming up here in just a few minutes, but when the Predators got on the power play, I never once really felt like they were dangerous. And that's something that's going to have to change. If the Predators are going to have any shot to come back in this series, you've got to find a way to mount some opportunities to be dangerous on the power play. And I didn't feel like the Predators last night on the power play were very dangerous at all.
Yeah, well, it's hard to be dangerous if you can't set up, and they didn't do that much. Like their third opportunity, they finally did there, and you know they had a couple little glimpses of opportunity, but very little. So, I mean, really, if there was one thing you point to that was great for the Preds, the penalty kill stepped up big time. And that is a tough power play to deal with. But like you said, the flip side of that is the power play just didn't look remotely effective. And it's amazing. Although again, the penalty kill was outstanding. It's amazing when you watch the two teams set up their power plays, because the Canes, it's, you know, and I know, I mean, they are very, very aggressive on the kill. So they are willing it's not really gamble, but they're willing to be very aggressive and not letting you set up. But it was amazing watching them quickly get it together and then start moving the puck around, and the Preds just not be able to even start. So they've got serious work to do on that front.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Tyler from Berry Hill texting in. So first off, can we talk about how badly Josi played? He made multiple uncharacteristic mistakes and was just mishandling the puck consistently. It's the worst game I've seen from him, and Ryan Ellis continues to get pushed around and lacks a physical presence. It was interesting, Joe, last night, and it happened a couple of times to Josi, I think in the first period, and continued to happen to different guys throughout the game, where you're going to play the puck and you either mishandle it or you flubbed it a little bit. I don't know if it was playoff nerves, a little bit of rust being off for a week, or if the ice was bad. I don't know what was going on with kind of handling the puck last night, but I did notice that with Josi a few times. They got caught out there in a couple of bad moments. I mean, the fourth goal by Carolina, where Jordan Staal just comes crashing in on the forecheck. He gets around Tanner Janot. He's all over Ryan Ellis. Ryan Ellis just gets totally pushed off the puck. Jordan Staal takes it. Josi tries to clear it. It goes back to the stick of Staal, and it's in the net, and it's 4-2, and you knew the game was over at that point. I mean, there's certainly going to have to be a higher level of play from Josi and Ellis in this series if you're going to have a chance. And I agree with Tyler. I didn't think either one of those guys was particularly all that good last night.
No, and on the Staal goal, the first Staal goal, and I know that was 4-on-4, and you know, I think Johansson, you know, let it get behind him. But that was a play where, you know, if you watch that, and it's very easy to watch anything in slow motion and say, see, this should have happened. I mean, Josi, let him split him and Ekholm, and still like an incredible shot by Staal there. But that was another play where it's like, Josi, you've got to put the body on somebody and not let that happen.
That first Staal goal felt like Ryan Kessler from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Where he went, remember when Kessler went right through Shea Weber and Shane O'Brien?
Yeah.
And Staal goes right through Josi and Ekholm and then roofs it. Like that was a very impressive play by Stahl.
It was, and that was the one goal that I had a problem with Saros as well. And I get what he's doing there because it's a really tough angle shot, and you can feel somebody coming on the backside. So you're trying to kind of set yourself up to be able to push across and take away that pass and go explosively side to side like we've seen him do so many times during this stretch. But when you kind of cheat like that, and they talked about this on the broadcast a little bit too, when you cheat a little bit like that, you leave some net exposed, and Jordan Stahl made a great decision to shoot that puck. It was a great shot. I don't want to take anything away from Jordan Stahl, but that was one of those situations where I thought UC Saros got caught cheating a little bit on that play.
So of the four goals he let in, that'd be the one you have a problem with?
I mean, yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. The first one was, I mean, that was unbelievable by Teuvo Teravainen. I mean, that's one of the
basketball bounce pass.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the best redirections I've ever seen in my life. And Crosby did it the day before. So it's happened 2 days in a row, that same kind of play, which is pretty incredible. I mean, look, I don't look at that second goal by Stahl and to go up 2-1 for the Canes and just say, oh, UC Saros has got to have that one. I understand what he's trying to do there. So it's tough to hold all that against him. But, yes, like of the four, that's the one I point to and say, man, just hang on to that post and make sure before you go flying across the crease.
The third goal is the one that – the funny thing is I was all ready to come in here today and say, you know what? Good Branson's not bad. Uh-huh. And then the third goal happened.
Yeah, that was bad. It was just a bad play. I mean, after the game last night, I went and took a look at it, and you've got Ben Harper trying to pinch up and close it down at the blue line. That went very poorly. He just got absolutely smoked on the outside. Good Branson's late coming over to take away the pass, so he doesn't take away the shot, and he doesn't take away the pass, so he's just kind of sitting there in no man's land. And somehow Saros makes the incredible save on that play, and then you've got literally five Predators watching the puck behind the net, and Niederreiter's just wide open. I mean, there's nothing Saros can do about that Niederreiter shot from the slot.
Yeah, that was one of those, and again, the third period was just a whole bunch of this, but that was just one of those difference in speed between the teams, and just, you know, the Preds just looking, like you said, they're just reacting to stuff too slowly, and then it's too late. I mean, you know, I thought Saros I thought Saros was good. I mean, I can't really fault. I mean, you make a good point on how he was bracing for a pass on the first Stahl goal, but for the most part, I just can't put much of anything on him in this game. And I guess the question is, how much do you blame the Preds for mistakes and for not playing their game? How much do you credit the team they're playing for just being, at times, just overwhelming?
And the crazy part is I thought Nedeljkovic in net for Carolina was pretty shaky last night, like especially in the first period and a half of that game. I mean, there were simple shots the Predators were putting towards the net, and he was having a tough time corralling them. I mean, there were rebounds that were popping out. Arvidsson had a redirection that almost trickled its way into the net. I mean, I thought Nedeljkovic really didn't look all that great in goal last night, and then the Predators just couldn't find a way to get to him consistently enough. So I'm interested to see what that looks like as they move forward here. Can Nedeljkovic settle in? Can the Predators find a way to get to him a little bit better starting in game two? That's going to be interesting to see, but a tough loss for the Predators in game one. They're now down 1-0 in this series, and as you know, and we was talked about a lot yesterday, the Predators have never won a series where they've lost game one. So that's eventually got to change. That's not going to be the case throughout the entire history of their franchise, but a tough start for the Predators against the Carolina Hurricanes last night, and we're off and running here today on the show, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. When we come back, what did we think of the lineup last night in Game 1? How much blame does John Hines deserve for what we saw last night in Game 1? We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The Carolina Hurricanes get three third-period goals and win game one by a 5-2 score.
The third period wasn't really our strongest period. I thought we started off the game pretty good. Then second period, we kind of sat back on a couple penalties that kind of got our momentum off. And it's something that we obviously need to do a better job of, taking too many penalties. And Killers are doing a great job, but they're killing too much. So that's something that we need to improve on going forward. But then the third, I feel we had a couple chances, but we didn't get that pushback that we wanted, especially after their first one.
Predators forward Philip Forsberg after the game last night, a 5-2 loss for the Predators in game one of their Stanley Cup playoff series against the Carolina Hurricanes. Now, game two taking place tomorrow. Reacting all show long today on game one of the playoffs. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben on the text line says, great game. It was definitely worth keeping the team together again. I sense a little sarcasm from Ben there. It's one game in the series. I realize it looked bad. Carolina looked very good, but it is one game. I don't think we can just totally dismiss the series as of yet. It is one game.
Ben is the ultimate doom and gloomer.
He is. He's a big doom and gloomer.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, it's not that surprising. There's some comments on my my column on The Athletic that are, and I'm not surprised, you know, to that effect.
Sure.
You know, I've got the how many seasons would Poil have lasted in a big market stuff, you know, the media soft, et cetera, et cetera. Look, even if this series goes seven and the Preds lose game seven, you know, after seven overtimes, there's going to be a lot of, why did we not sell, right?
Sure.
If they don't win. But if they get smoked, then it's going to come quicker and it's going to be more intense. And look, I mean, it's all fair. It is one game, though. That is worth mentioning at this point.
It is, and we'll see how the Predators respond coming up in game two. And one of the big talking points last night while the game was going on, really before the game even started, was the lineup and what the lineup was going to look like. Would Elli Tolvanen be a part of things? What's going to happen on the third defense pair? How do you handle the third line? If Arvidsson's back in there, where is he going to play? I mean, Arvidsson was back in there. He plays on the top line with Johansson and Forsberg. Elli Tolvanen was out last night, which I don't think was a huge surprise when you listen to John Hines here on this show, when you listen to some comments that David Poile made over the weekend as well. So I wasn't necessarily surprised by those moves. But when line rushes happened in the warm-up and all of a sudden the third defense pairing is Ben Harper and Erik Gudbranson in game one of the playoffs, and not only is Tanner Jeannot in there, which I don't think it surprised anybody, but Matthew Olivier is in there as well. No Brad Richardson, no Nick Cousins. I was surprised by what the lineup looked like a little bit, and I realize it was pretty clear what the Predators were trying to do. They were trying to be big. They were trying to be physical. That was the way they wanted to play in game one. I was pretty surprised, though, Joe, when I looked at that, at those pregame line rushes, and Olivier was in there, and the third D pair ended up being Ben Harper and Erik Gudbranson.
Yeah, and credit due, by the way. Gosh, he tweeted at us last night. I don't remember the name on the text line.
I think it was John from Clarksville.
John from Clarksville, and I said, I was like, oh, come on now. They're not gonna put one of the herdliners on the third line. No way. And they did. So that was a surprise. Like, yeah, it's at Forsberg's stash on Twitter, by
yes.
the way. And a great picture of Forsberg's stash. But yeah, the Tolvanen being out, this has been hinted at and talked around for a few days. But yeah, I thought it would be like a Richardson or a Cousins, and instead those guys have played really well. That was a surprise, along with I thought Benning would be in this game. I wasn't shocked about Fabbro either. But to have Benning or to have Gudbranson and Harper was interesting and a little bit surprising to me. A lot of size, but Those things, I mean, it was as big, burly a lineup as you could possibly put on the ice. And obviously, going in, it was like, well, if they win, then it's just like it's another stroke of genius. You know, you change things, you do some things you've never done before. I mean, I don't think Jeannot, Duchesne, and Halla have ever played together.
No.
And then if you lose, then the second guessing happens, instantly, and it did.
It did. I mean, that was a very popular topic on Twitter last night, and it was a popular topic in the post-game press conference as well. John Hines talked about the difficulty of the lineup decisions and the lineup that he went with last night in Game 1. Here's what Predators head coach John Hines had to say.
Was it difficult to put this together, and did you consider that maybe it was, I don't know, too heavy of a lineup going into this game?
So, guys, look, we came in as 2-2 going into third period, and you have to make lineup decisions. You know, back to Jared's question, you know, we were physical. It was hard. It was a hard-fought game. It's 2-2 going into third period, and, you know, you look at a couple of goals, they're breakdowns in the goals. One of them's the turnover. They come back in. It's a D-zone coverage goal, so... I think when you look at those situations, we can talk all about the lineup we want, but we played physical, we played hard, it was a competitive game, and we didn't find a way to win one. So as we've said, we're going to be able to make lineup decisions that we want, but as we've gone all year long, it hasn't been who's in or who's out, it's how we've played, and today we didn't play well enough to win. I think when you look at the lineup as it's gone through, we played hard, but we have to stay out of the penalty box. Interference, trip, high stick, holding, and two unsportsmanlike conducts at the end. So it didn't have anything to do with that.
So that was Predators head coach John Hines after the game. And, Joe, let me first start by saying, obviously John Hines has done a great job, and the fact that they're in this position, I think he deserves a lot of credit for it. I think he deserves some heat for these lineup decisions last night. I really do. I mean, and I've said this many times here on the show, there is absolutely zero reason, zero, for Eric Gudbranson to be in this lineup. There is no reason for Eric Gudbranson to be in this lineup. I thought Ben Harper last night was awful. And I realize, look, they had a lot more problems last night than just the third D pair. And I'm not saying if you have a different third D pair out there that all of a sudden you're going to beat Carolina in this game. As you said, I think it was pretty clear last night, especially as that game went along, there was a pretty big difference in the way these two teams played. And the way that Carolina came out last night, I'm not sure if it mattered what lineup the Predators went with. But at some point, like, you've got to have a way to generate offense against Carolina. And when you're going with Matthew Olivier back on the herd line, you're moving Tanner Jeannot up to the third line. You played Matt Duchesne 10 minutes last night, and I think you only played him like 6.5, 7 minutes at 5-on-5, which I get it. Matt Duchesne has been a little bit in the doghouse. But if you're going to play him like 7 minutes at 5-on-5, I don't really know what the point of having him in the lineup is. I thought it was not a good lineup last night. I thought it from the start. The three of us were in a text message thread before the game started, kind of raising our eyebrows as to what was going on. I think John Hines deserves some heat for what we saw last night. I was not a fan of that game one lineup that they put out there.
By the way, was that just me? Because my question, I started that with like, I didn't hear the first question. Did you hear the beginning of the presser, or did it start with him talking?
It started with him talking to me.
Okay, all right. So it wasn't just me, because I'm like, wait a minute, who asked him a question? Okay, apparently he's talking about the lineup. Yeah, and he got annoyed by the lineup comment or questions last night, you know, and he said at one point something that was interesting. He said, it's not who plays, but how we play. And that's a very coach thing to think, very coach thing to say, and I get it, and it's been a big part of how they get here. But I mean, it is still who, right?
Yes.
And I think, you know, I mean, this league, it's who, it's players who, you know, like, I'm last night while writing, I'm watching St. Louis, Colorado, and I'm like, boy, I can't believe I picked St. Louis to win this series. That's not going to happen. Those guys are ridiculously good. That's not what Tolvanen is, but I do think that when it comes down to it, if you have any players who can do skilled things at an elite level, and you're playing an opponent like this, it's just going to be hard to keep them in that phone booth for 60 minutes at a time. I think that there's a real case to be made to get your people out there who can give you some offense off skills they have that few people do.
When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the lineup for the Predators last night in Game 1 and get your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. What did you think of the lineup in Game 1? What needs to change heading into Game 2? All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 94.9 is the home for Nashville Sounds baseball. Tonight, the Sounds open a six-game homestand at First Horizon Park against the Gwinnett Stripers, the AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. Pre-game with Jeff Hem begins at 6:20, and first pitch is at 6:35. Nashville Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and by 312 Pizza Company. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, reacting to a Game 1 loss for the Nashville Predators against the Carolina Hurricanes and taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, we've been talking about the lineup and some of the decisions made by John Hines and the Predators coaching staff last night. Ben Harper and Eric Gudbranson, the third defense pairing. Dante Fabro on the bench, Matt Benning on the bench, Ellie Tolvanen not in the lineup last night as well. Neither was Brad Richardson or Nick Cousins. So Olivier comes back in, Janot moves up to the third line. I thought they had their moments. I mean, obviously Eric Halla scores a goal. Janot did a good job of going to the front of the net, but just not enough offense, not enough zone time sustained for the Predators last night. Let's go to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, when you're at as big of a disadvantage as the Predators are in this series, you owe it to your team to ice the best lineup possible. Last night was not it. Joe, when you look at the lineup last night, how much of the game and the result do you put at the feet of the lineup that was out there, and how much of it was just, hey, Carolina was by far the better team in the second half of that game last night?
I wrote this in The Athletic. I'll say it now and again. The lineup is worth discussing. It's worth looking at. I'm not sure that was the way to go. I'm also not sure it makes any difference at all. And it's going to be it's going to be overplayed because it's an obvious thing to talk about. But the bigger issue is Carolina to me. The bigger issue. So put in Benny and Fabro. The different outcome. Put in Tolvanen. I mean, I would put him in because I need to score a power play goal at some point in this series. Okay, so
yeah.
I think that it's worth looking at talking about, but it's going to be way overblown today relative to the bigger issue for the Preds, and that is the Carolina lineup. They are so good, and again, you're talking about that forecheck, Robbie, and as the game progresses, it's just like, man, those. Their decor is so good at moving the puck. They're so quick. They get it out of there. You can't get anything to stick on those guys. And then they're moving it on you, and you can't hit anybody. And they are just really good. And you can come up with any combination you want, and you're going to have the same problem. So that's my takeaway. It's worth a discussion because you got to figure something out. If you're John Hines, but I think a lot of today is going to be devoted to that. And I don't think it's as big a deal as some people want to make it.
Porth, what did you think of the Game 1 lineup last night for the Predators? And how much do you think that had to do with the result that we saw last night?
Not much with the results, but clearly there are changes that need to be made. I thought they lacked enough offense, but to Joe's point, I don't know how much it matters. Like, for instance, when you look at the power play, a lot of people last night were clamoring for Ellie Tolvanen. What difference does Ellie Tolvanen make on the power play last night when you're spending half the power play just trying to get possession?
Yep.
Like, Tolvanen isn't going to outmuscle a Jordan Staal or a Warren Fogle or forwards like that in the Carolina lineup to even get possession on the power play. Like, you have to have the puck for Tolvanen to be a difference maker on the power play, and they had a really hard time possessing the puck at 5-on-4 with the advantage. Now, it could make a difference in game two if you do win a faceoff and establish possession. And that's why I would probably have Tolvanen in there. But I don't think you can look at last night's loss and say that was because of the lineup. Now, maybe they tried to the extreme of being too physical.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that.
Because it was early. It was evident early on that the Canes were not going to back down. And how many times did you see the Preds try to lay a check and they were the ones ending up on the ice?
Yeah.
I mean, Tanner Jeannot went in there almost every shift trying to throw a check, throwing his body around. And sometimes it worked, but sometimes he bounced off a Carolina player.
Yeah.
And ended up that on the ice.
That was a great one. I mean, it was a great hit by him, but it was like he just went horizontal into the air.
Which we've not seen.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I agree with everything you just said, Ryan Porth.
No, well, thank you, Joe. That's something new to the program.
It's the nicest thing you said about you all week.
Like, I understand that is the way you're going to have to play against Carolina. That is the way Boston has played each of the last two postseasons,
yeah,
where they have completely embarrassed the Canes in the playoffs. But do you have the right personnel to do that? That's the question that I would have after game one, where Carolina clearly was ready for that physical presence from the Preds.
Well, they were, and Boston plays that way, but Boston also has Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and David Pastrnak. I mean, you got Philip Forsberg right now, who I thought played pretty well last night. I mean, outside of him, your offense is just limited at forward. I mean, it's just the truth of the matter. That's been the case all year long. I mean, there's Johansson's getting a lot of heat on our text line right now. I understand it, and a lot of people are pointing to the goal scored, not only the first stall goal that was scored, but the Niederreiter goal as well, where, yep, Johansson's just sitting there watching the play. Now, there were four other Predators watching the play too, so I get it. But I didn't think that Johansson last night was just some anchor out there. I thought he played okay.
Yeah.
I thought he was fine. The first pass he made to set up the Forsberg goal was an elite play. I mean, that's an elite-level play. He's just got to be better. But, I think we're getting to the point now with him and with Duchesne where we keep having the same conversations about them. I mean, they're guys that when they're on, they look pretty good. They're just not on anywhere near as often as you need them to be.
Also, with the lineup last night, I thought the more egregious decision was on defense with the third pair than anything made on offense. And that may not be a popular comment, but you look at that Canes third goal, Harper and Gudbranson were skating in quicksand, and looked like...
Well, and even after that, I mean, they give up that goal, and then Aho gets a breakaway, like, on the next shift,
yes,
while Harper's out there. I mean, Harper looked like he was taking his driver's test, trying to go around. I mean, it was unbelievable, just a traffic cone there.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Yeah, and I don't know... Again, I don't know how much of a difference if Benning and Fabro is your third pair, but I don't think they are looking like, in your words, a traffic cone out there like Gudbranson and Harper look like most of the night.
And Joe, I think the one when I look at that decision in particular, and I've made my thoughts on the Harper Gudbranson pairing pretty clear at this point. Not a big fan of it. But if you're going to do that, to me, it makes more sense to try to play that way at home when you can control the matchups a little bit better. Having, right, you know, Ben Harper and Eric Gudbranson out there against Sebastian Aho is probably not a very good recipe for success. And I think if you're going to try to play that way, I guess I would have liked to have seen that at home where you can control the matchups a little bit better rather than in game one of the playoffs on the road.
Yeah, like I said, Gudbranson, he had that really nice poke check, you know, to stop a 2-on-1. And I was like, oh, Gudbranson, I'm bringing that to the show tomorrow. And then, yeah, never mind. But, you know, guys, we're 45 minutes in, and we still, when we're talking about the lineup, still haven't talked about, to me, the biggest disappointment, which was the second line. I didn't see them all night.
Yeah.
And I would no longer, I mean, this happens fast. First of all, it happens every year that you've got something that's doing something the regular season, and then you take it to the postseason, and it's like, what happened? But I would not consider that line untouchable at this point either. I was very underwhelmed. I mean, they just couldn't get anything going. I mean, Duchesne, made a great pass on the hollow goal, at least made a play that led to a goal. But that line, to me, has to be examined as well, because they just got gobbled up.
And look, a lot of people were frustrated last night that Eli Tolvanen wasn't in there. Again, Joe, that was not a surprise to me. Now, I did say on the show yesterday, and I was on with Jared yesterday as well, that I would have Tolvanen in there, because I just think that what he brings to the table, you might need. It could change a game. Like, you're going to need him at some point on the power play. But I think if you feel that way, you also have to recognize that Eli Tolvanen has not been very good as of late. Like, he's got to be better than he's been, or he's not really serving a purpose for you in his lineup. I mean, I know he got injured, and sometimes it takes players a while to come back from injury, but he's not been the same guy since he's come back from injury, and he's not been anywhere near as effective 5-on-5. Forget the power play. He's not been anywhere near as effective 5-on-5 either. So, look, I think you're going to see him at some point. I think there's a decent chance you might see Eli Tolvanen back in there in game two. But just because he gets back in there, I don't think everything's just automatically going to be cured. He's got to be a whole lot better than he's been down the stretch. And I think it's disappointing that we're even having this conversation based on the way he was playing earlier this season. Because to me, the way he was playing earlier this season, if you're even approaching that, if you're Eli Tolvanen, there's no way John Hines is taking you out of the lineup.
I agree. And I also wonder if, a lot of times guys come back from injury, they're able to play, but they're not all right.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's the case with him. But maybe a little extra rest here will make a difference. I do think it's something I think you have to try, because, again, he can just do some things that few guys in your lineup can do. And Carolina has a lot more guys like that than you do. So I think it's worth a look. But, yes, it's almost like, I mean, the Tolvanen reaction since this even got brought up last week, it's now we're going back 3 years to he's going to come in and, be a top six forward in this cup run right away. I mean, it's let's pump the brakes a little bit on the expectations.
Coming up next, there was a series of events last night that reminded me of the 2019 series against the Dallas Stars. And that was not a very good thing for the Nashville Predators. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Taking your thoughts on Game 1 of the Predators and Hurricane Series. The Predators fall 5-2 last night to the Carolina Hurricanes. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, I said before the break, there was a series of events and just the way the game shook out last night at times reminded me of the 2019 series against the Stars from this standpoint. And we talked about it a little bit to begin the show. I didn't think it was a very good night last night for Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis. And Ryan Ellis in particular last night, I thought at times he was soft. I mean, you got Jordan Staal coming in on the forecheck last night. Ellis just gets totally knocked off the puck. It's a goal. It's 4-2. You feel like the game's over with at that point. And not only does Ellis get knocked off the puck on the forecheck by Staal, but Josi tries to clear it. It goes off of Staal, back onto his stick, and all of a sudden it's in the back of your net. You mentioned the first Staal goal where Josi just kind of lets Staal go right down Broadway there, and he splits the defense between he and Ekholm. I did not think it was a very good night for the top defense pairing for the Nashville Predators. Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis, I thought, got exposed at times, and that's led to a lot of conversation on Periscope today. Our friend Jeff on Periscope, very critical of Ryan Ellis's performance. I got a few people on the text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, critical of Ellis's performance as well. I think back to that 2019 series, and that was not a good look for Ryan Ellis. The play everybody thinks about is Jamie Benn just shoving him off the puck and Dallas scoring the goal there. Now, we came to find out after that Ellis was hurt in that series, so you've got to keep that in mind here. But I did not think it was an overly impressive last night for that defense pair. I thought at times they were soft and they got pushed around, and that can't happen. Like, those two guys can't play the way they played last night for this team to have any chance whatsoever in this series.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I'll go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And this is an unnamed texter, but the text says, Ellis needs to sit, figure out if he wants to play or not. He's been absent all season, brings little to nothing to the ice. He's undersized, can't handle physical force, can't clear the front of the net. This love affair with what he brought in the past has got to stop. Seems like every time we pay players, Arvidsson, Ellis, Duchene, Johansson, they seem to disappear. Where's the accountability? And, you know, this has come up a time or two with Ellis. And, again, like Ellis is a guy who – and I don't know. I'm looking at that list of guys. I can't sit here and say, got paid, stop caring. Got paid, stop playing.
Yeah.
I think with Ellis, there's some realities with him. Just like there's some realities with how good Carolina is. I mean, there are times when Ellis, I mean, he's not big, you know. This is sure. why some people, you know, were hesitant about him. But I agree. He's got to figure out a way to be more effective than that and be tougher than that. You know, I mean, honestly, on that basketball bounce pass goal, thought he did about everything you could possibly do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hold anything against him.
The redirect that ends up going glove side on Saros. But this is not the first time this has happened where he gets pushed around. And I mean, there's no, like, I don't know what the answer is other than Ellis, please play better, right? There's not going to be a move relative to this.
No.
He's a huge part of their team. I disagree that, you know, he's been ineffective all season. I think he's been pretty good this season. But he is one of those guys that we've seen a few times now in the postseason where when it gets the way postseason hockey gets, it does not suit him all the time.
Sure. And look, I think you've got to be realistic with this conversation too. I think sometimes people go to way too many extremes when it comes to Ryan Ellis. Like, there are some people that think that Ryan Ellis is no good and he just doesn't deserve to be out there. And we've gotten a couple of those on the text line today. I know Jared's often very, very critical of Ryan Ellis as well. I think you can recognize that Ryan Ellis is a pretty good defenseman while also recognizing that he's got some shortcomings in his game when it comes to the physicality part of it. Like, nobody's going to mistake Ryan Ellis for Shea Weber out there throwing people aside. Now, he's been a very smart player. Positionally, he's usually in the right spot. Like, even to your point last night on the Teravainen goal that ties that game up at one, like, I don't know what else Ryan Ellis is supposed to do on that play. He was in the right spot. He was between the forward and the goaltender, and Teravainen just made a heck of a play that you've just sometimes got to tip your cap to your opponent. So most of the time, Ryan Ellis is a good player, and he is in the right spot, and he overcomes his lack of size by knowing what to do. But there are some realities where sometimes he just gets shoved around, and he did last night. Now, I thought at times last night, and I think a lot of this is due to Carolina as well, and they deserve credit for it, I thought there was a little bit of panic in the game of the Predators, trying to get the puck out too soon, trying to really just chip it down the wall and not being calm, not being poised, making the right play, making the strong play along the boards. I mean, Yossi's trying to get the puck out of the zone on that fourth goal by Carolina, and he just shoots it right into Jordan Staal there. I mean, it's plays that we don't normally see happen from Ellis and Yossi last night we saw, and that's not all just their mistakes. Carolina deserves some credit for that. But they've got to find a way to be more effective, not only in the D zone, but getting out of the D zone. I thought they struggled at times last night to get out. And that's usually not something that's a problem for Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis. And if that's going to be the case, it's just going to be difficult for the Predators to sustain any offensive zone time whatsoever when you're having that much trouble getting out of your own end.
Well, and that's the Carolina effect, right?
Yep.
I mean, to me, more than anything, it's just like when the Preds in this run, 27-1 to get here, they found that when they really lay the body on people, sometimes they get, you know, they're moving that puck a little faster than they want to, you know, and then you have an opportunity off that, or you can, you know, keep cycling in the forecheck. You know, you can get a turnover, score off it. And Carolina puts so much pressure on you. And John Hines talked a little bit about that last night too. There were some times where patience maybe would have given them opportunity and it wasn't there. It's easy for us to say all this stuff. When you're playing that team, they really put you under the gun. And it is as simple with some of these guys, and those two guys for sure, Ellis and Yossi. I mean, they have to play better. They can play better than they played last night. There is no doubt about that.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. James texted in, I don't understand why Arvidsson's on the top line. He constantly gets knocked down or is falling down. He hasn't been using his speed to his advantage. Duchesne should move up with Forsberg and Joey because he's harder to knock off the puck. If it were up to me, Rocco would play over Victor Arvidsson.
Arvidsson, I don't bet.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he comes back in last night. It's his first game. It's playoff hockey. Look, and we've talked about this, Joe. There is kind of a knock on Arvidsson that when the playoffs come around, he's just not been the same guy. Like, I thought last year against Arizona, he was really good. But all you got to do is go and look at his just basic stats. He has not been as productive in the playoffs historically as he's been in the regular season. And I think you can point to what's pretty obvious at this point, that sometimes his size can be an issue when it comes to the playoff hockey discussion, much like we were just talking about with Ryan Ellis as well.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. So, look, it's interesting with Grimaldi. That poor guy couldn't even get on. Like, the Bally Sports had their scratches list, and they didn't even mention poor Rocco, yeah. You know. You could make the case for him, too. You could. Another smaller guy, but a guy who skates and has a lot of energy. I think it's an interesting point on that top line. You know, does Hines want to stick with that? Like you said earlier, they did some good things. They got a goal. Johansson made a big-time play to Forsberg. But is Arvidsson the best choice with those guys? It's a fair question, too. I think there's a lot beyond just the obvious stuff, the third pairing and Tolvanen, for Hines to look at going into game two.
So we gave our predictions yesterday for this series for the Predators against the Hurricanes. A lot of you gave your predictions as well on our text line or on social media. Does game one change the way you feel about this series? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.